Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good morning and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we have another fantastic show for you today. We're going to be talking about high school tennis and also junior tennis and how the two relate to one another. I have an awesome guest for us today, Bill Patton, who is a coach, he's a dad, he's an author, he's a blogger, he is a fantastic resource for me personally. I have picked his brain extensively. He is a life skills trainer as well. So Bill comes at this tennis thing from lots of different angles, and I'm sure we'll be sharing some very unique and interesting perspectives with us today. Before I bring Bill on, I want to just mention a couple housekeeping items. First of all, those of you who have found us on Tuesdays at 11, thank you for finding us since we moved from Mondays, and I hope you'll share the new time slot, day and time slot, with your friends so that they can find us as well. As always, the show airs live for 1 hour. At the end of the hour, we'll go into recording mode for the podcast, which will be online later today on the radio show page at parentingaces.com. So if we do happen to go a little over, Bill and I can get pretty chatty when we get going. Make sure you check out the end of the show on the podcast. That'll be online later today. Also, last night was the deadline for nominating your favorite tournament directors for our inaugural Parenting Aces Best Tournament Director Award. So I've gotten lots of fantastic nominations. Look forward to reading through them and announcing our winners in a couple weeks. So thank you for those of you who took the time to write in and support those tournament directors who are doing an outstanding job out there. I think it's time we shine a light on the people who are doing things well and maybe cut back a little bit on all the criticism. That's kind of my new tactic I'm going to take moving forward, and I hope you'll join me in that and focus on, like I said, shining a light on the good stuff going on. And so that's the goal with these Best Tournament Director Awards, and I think we're off to a great start given the number of nominations I received. So thank you again for that. Before I bring Bill on the line, I want to go to a quick commercial, and when we come back, my guest, Bill Patton.
Warning. Orthopedic surgeons are seeing an increase in overuse injuries when young athletes perform the same repetitive stressful motions over and over. Pitching, tennis, weight training, even long swimming workouts can cause overuse trauma that may require surgery. If your kids play and train hard, visit orthoinfo.org or stopsportsinjuries.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I am so excited to jump right into today's show with my guest, Bill Patton. Bill, are you on the line with us?
I'm here, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great. I'm, as I mentioned before we went on the air, still recovering a bit from a long weekend of tennis with my son and the holiday and all of that, but ready to jump right into our conversation today. So thanks for being with us.
No, it's my pleasure to be on the show. Thank you.
Well, those of my listeners who have been around a while may remember that, gosh, I don't even know, it's been maybe a year since you were on the show last, and we were talking about high school tennis, and we had all sorts of technical difficulties, and it was just a big fat cluster. I was broadcasting from a hotel lobby in South Carolina, and it was crazy. But so I want to really kind of pick up where we left off before, but also expand our conversation. You have kind of taken it on as your personal charge to promote high school tennis in the U.S., and you've written a book called The Art of Coaching High School Tennis. And so I would love to just lead off with your thoughts on what makes high school tennis special and why we as tennis parents need to be looking at that as a viable competition pathway for our children.
Wow, thank you for that introduction. And, you know, I wanted to actually go back to something you said, because a quote that has come to me that I really want to live by is criticize by creating. And I love the idea of your tournament director awards. And, you know, the more that we can create stuff and to fill in what we think is missing, then that's a lot more positive and helpful than to just stop and point the finger and say, you know, somebody's not doing something or what have you, or they're doing it wrong. Anyway, so to the tennis, you know, there's a bold statement that I make with people, and I've, a number of pretty high-profile people have agreed with me that somewhere in America there are a handful of high school freshmen playing tennis that could be in the top 100 in the world. Because they have the athleticism, the drive, the interest, and everything that it takes to do that. What we need to do, though, is identify them immediately and promote them and get them on the right track. Mm-hmm. So that's one small part of my mission with high school tennis is to find those diamonds in the rough or the late bloomers who will go on to become, you know, quite good.
I think that's a great goal. I mean, tennis, we parents all think that if our kids aren't specializing by the age of 8, that they don't have a shot of making it either to the college level or, you know, beyond. And your premise is that's not true. A good athlete's a good athlete, and given the right coaching and the right opportunities, really has a shot no matter how late they start at the game. Am I stating that correctly?
Well, I guess I'll make a different comment, but I think it's very interesting that, you know, they make a big deal out of so many of the top 10 grew up on clay, right? But what they don't talk about is that so many of the top 10 play soccer.
Right.
So, you know, all the best players in the world play multiple sports. They just play the other ones recreationally. One of the coolest things you can do is go to a tournament and see, especially like at Indian Wells, a big group of ATP Tour players playing soccer.
Yeah, I love that. I always get excited when Tennis Channel flashes to that field.
In fact, one time I was in a stadium and I was close to the edge where I could see the soccer field, and pretty much on every changeover I would look over and watch that. And I got some super slow-mo footage of Djokovic playing soccer. So that's, you know, it's an interesting thing. I think another interesting reason to cross-train and play other sports as well in the early stages is that you spend some time on grass and you develop teamwork and you make friends more often. And, you know, there's just so many other benefits to playing other sports. You get to play on softer surfaces. I'm also very fond of saying that running around on asphalt for 15 years is a really bad idea.
Yeah, well, that's true. It wreaks havoc on the body, that's for sure. Well,
yeah,
let me throw something out at you. You know, as the parent of a kid who did specialize early because I didn't know any better, when my son did decide to play high school tennis his freshman year of high school, I was thrilled. And, you know, he joined a team. He made varsity as a freshman, which was awesome. I can tell you there are probably some parents out there that would be a little ruffled if a non-competitive tennis player, meaning a kid who hasn't been in the USTA tournament system or ITF tournament system, showed up for high school tennis tryouts and beat their kid out for a spot on the team. Have you faced that?
Well, you know, that's an interesting scenario. I don't know how likely it is that that's going to happen exactly like that, because you do need that competitive background in some regard. But, you know, looking at it from the perspective of a coach, you know, if this is really truly a team and we're trying to be our best, then we want our best players on the squad. Now, you know, this is true in any sport that, you know, if a new great player joins the team, then somebody might lose their starting spot, but the team is better. So it, you know, it comes back to the power of why are we doing it? I mean, if it is a tennis team, then everything's about the team. So I don't think it's likely that someone who's played ITFs is going to be anything less than the number one or two player on their team. But yeah, I mean, I think it also brings it up the topic of, you know, who should play high school tennis, who should skip high school tennis, you know, and I think that there's a decision to make. And I think looking back, some kids, I think, regret the fact that they did not play high school tennis when really they could have and they could have done very well.
Well, let's dive into that a little deeper, because, again, you know, just deriving from my own personal experience with this, my son played his freshman year, chose not to play his sophomore and junior year due to a few reasons, but is planning to play again this year as a senior, and I'm thrilled he's decided to play. I think it's a great decision on his part. The quest for the state championship is, you know, driving that decision, and I think that's an honorable goal to have as a tennis player and as an athlete and as a member of a high school population. So what are your thoughts on who should play and who shouldn't play and what drives that decision?
Well, I think first off, you know, the fact that your son's playing, I think, shows is one scenario. And it's a matter of legacy, which seems kind of ridiculous to put that on a high school kid. But, you know, flash forward 10 years and 20 years and returning to the, you know, the school reunions and, you know, Johnny was number one in his section and went on and played college tennis, but he didn't play for our team. So now he will return to those things and always be seen as sort of a non-contributor to the school. But if Johnny goes and plays and does his best and represents the school at all these, you know, at these high levels, then he really gets a chance to be celebrated by his schoolmates, you know, in school and then after. I mean, it really is an important contribution to make. I think it's very interesting, the mindset of tennis people in general, because in almost every other sport, you almost must play high school sports in order to become a college athlete. You have to be on the basketball team. You have to be on the football team. And yeah, you will be a man or a woman among boys or girls. You know, there have been numerous high-profile athletes who've come from this area who went on to be. And I remember Jason Kidd when he was a teenager, and he was phenomenal. And his teams always won every game by 20 points, and nobody could stay on the court with him. And yet he played high school basketball, and he dominated the game. And but then he found ways to go practice against college and NBA players in his spare time. So how tennis people have it in their mind that high school tennis can be a complete waste of time, you know, I'm not really understanding that, because almost every other sport makes that work.
Well, I think it has to do with the importance that the school itself places on tennis, or the lack of importance the school places on tennis. And I've mentioned this to you before, but, you know, one example is our high school. My son goes to public high school. The tennis coach is the football conditioning coach. He's not a tennis guy. He doesn't really understand or know the game of tennis, you know, beyond the basic scoring. And so, like, running practices and things like that, he has very little knowledge of the appropriate drills or how a tennis practice should look. And yet he brings an aspect to the tennis team that's unique, because he's coming from the football world, and these kids that play for him, most of them have, you know, if they have played football, they haven't played since the itty-bitty kid days, you know, flag football or whatever. So they're not used to that type of coaching environment. So it's an interesting dilemma, because when my son played freshman year, and I suspect this may have changed since then, but when my son played freshman year, tennis practice, team practice was mandatory, and it was daily after school, which meant that my son was missing his private coaching drills, and every match was mandatory to attend, whether or not you were in the lineup, which I totally support that. However, you didn't find out until after the entire team warmed up for the match whether or not you'd be playing that day. So if you weren't in the lineup on a given day, the only balls you were hitting were the 10 minutes of the team warm-up before the match actually started. And then that was it, because you're at the match till dark. So, you know, so it was a challenge for the coach. It has been a challenge for this coach to get our top competitive junior tennis players to sign on to play for him.
Well, okay, and so that's certainly a widespread disease, you know, in America. And I think that there are schools, and these are the exceptions, but there are schools that really truly value their high school tennis. And they're generally higher performing schools. And they're usually not so great in football. There are pockets where the high school tennis really does matter, and the team is celebrated, and they have good coaching. But so let's run through some scenarios. All right, one, your situation—that's a tough one. And so what does it require? It requires a culture change of some type. I will say to you that the reason that football and basketball will reign supreme is because parents and spectators and the community's really into it.
Right.
And they also create revenue. So if a band of parents got together, a band of tennis parents got together and said, "Hey, we really love our tennis team and we want to see the best for it," then I think that over time you can change that culture. You know, it might be time to, you know, sit down with the coach and say, "Hey, you know, we know you want the best for the kids. And so I mean, I think you have to presume that people have great motives and then let them prove that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they prove that they don't, then you take it to the next step. Then you have to go to the athletic director and you have to say, hey, look, we really want the best for all these kids who are playing tennis. Do you want the best for the kids? Because having the football coach the team when there are any number of qualified coaches who could come in and either run it themselves or assist and, you know, consult with the coach on running a proper practice and whatnot. And, you know, then you can slowly change the culture. And these things take time. I mean, sometimes it moves like a glacier. And one thing people don't realize about schools, I think, sometimes, is that school personnel rarely want to give the impression to parents that they are malleable. Because if you give the impression to parents that you're malleable, then you're going to find yourself getting hit a lot. So they will almost always give off this unchangeableness, because they don't want to have to succumb to the whims of this week's parent who has a reason that everything must change today. So, you know, and I've been there. I've been a high school teacher and a coach, and dealt with parents who thought, you know, that all of a sudden, because their kid's on the team, now we have to do it a completely different way. Now, I mean, I've also made mistakes like what your coach has done with the lineup or whatnot, and really, is that a best practice? I mean, it would be good to raise that particular issue, you know. How would you feel if you were not told if you were playing that day?
Interesting.
So did I cover that enough?
Well, yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, things may have changed. It's been, you know, 2 years since my son played on the team, so we don't really know what to expect for this year, and, you know, maybe he has changed his approach to things, which would be awesome. If he hasn't, at least we know what we're going into this year and, you know, making an informed decision, so that's good too. But can we kind of talk a little bit about, because you mentioned, like, who should play and who should not play. Can we talk in more detail about that, more specifically?
Yeah, let's go top to bottom on that. No, let's go bottom to top. Okay, if you are a beginner tennis player, then you should join your tennis team. And if you can make it, good for you, because you'll get to play and you'll become good. You know, and then everybody who is at a level where either on their team or in their league, there's enough adequate competition that it keeps them challenged, then they should play for their team. And so it's not necessary always that your team have enough players on it, but that you're going to get some quality matches. Another benefit that people, I don't think, put enough value on is the fact that winning a few matches 6-0, 6-0 can be good for you. And so if you do have a mixture of competition in your league where you know absolutely you're going to win this match 0-0 today, then it presents you with a couple of different opportunities. One, in a live match with almost no pressure, you can build something new into your game that day. So I've had my players, when we're playing weaker competition, serve and volley on first and second serve. And, you know, or, you know, experiment with the occasional drop shot, not so much that they're going to humiliate their opponent, but just enough that they're really working that shot. And then there's the whole idea of, being a front runner and not playing down to the competition. That is such a vital skill moving forward, especially when you're going to have two matches in one day. And they're going to be, you know, then being able to conserve energy by being a great front runner and going for the golden set of winning almost every point. You know, that's a great way to develop that concentration level to make that happen. So it's, you can find value in these things if you're looking for it. So moving up the scale, now once you start to become, you know, ranked pretty high and maybe the competition is thinning out and there are fewer people for you to play in league, then you kind of have a decision to make in terms of, are there enough people, are there one or two people on my team who are sort of like me that I can at least practice with, then I would encourage people to play the high school tennis and be the number one player and have a chance at being the MVP of the team, which no one can ever take away from you, and vie for a league championship. And, you know, championships aren't easy to come by. So, you know, it's funny. I think Shaquille O'Neal had never won any kind of championship in his life until he was NBA champion with the Los Angeles Lakers. And so, that really struck me. And he was, I think he cried because he'd never won a championship. So these championships, they're so rare, and you can all, I mean, if you have a certificate that says league champion on your wall, you've always got that, and it's, it can be a great source of pride that you represented your school and did that well. So then the next level up is where the decision becomes more difficult when you are head and shoulders above your team and or your head and shoulders above the entire league. So you know that practice might not be the most valuable experience for you, and certainly, you know, you have a chance at running the table in your league and most likely, you know, winning most all of your matches by scores that are not very close. There was a gal locally here. Her name was Jenna Long, and she got a full ride to North Carolina, won the NCAA doubles championship, and played in the U.S. Open twice. Well, she played for her high school and did not lose a set. In fact, I think 97% of her matches or something like that, she won 6-0, 6-0. But she played all those, and she still got her full ride. Now, I think the advice that I would give people is if there's a way to find value in that, then great. But if not, then maybe you can go very humbly to the coach and, you know, and ask if it's possible for you to participate on the team. And that would it be possible for there to be any kind of flexibility with scheduling? So in 24 seasons of coaching, I have had three players that I gave these types of flexibilities to. And twice it worked out, and once it was just an awful flame out that was embarrassing, and I write a chapter about the prima donna in my book, because it's just an awful experience for the player, for myself, and for the team. Because all this player wanted to do was take advantage. So if you're lucky, then you'll find a coach who will give some kind of flexibility, and then it's about, it's about negotiating that. But I can tell you from a coach's perspective, it's pretty rough when you have a player who comes to you dictating terms. And that was the genesis of my worst experience. So let me tell you about the three experiences and how they differ.
Okay.
The first one was a kid who had been ranked pretty high in Northern California and was going towards the top of the juniors, but kind of got burned out on that and joined the high school tennis team, became the number one player as a freshman, won the league title a couple of times. And in his junior year now, he came to me before the season and said, "Hey, coach, I want to become the valedictorian." And then not only that, but I'm up until like 1 o'clock in the morning helping everybody else with their homework. So I was wondering if I could just play the tough matches and then and take the ones where you don't need me off. You know, and here's a kid who had sweated blood for us on the court, and he'd won a couple of league titles and played through cramps in meaningless matches and just, you know, I mean, this kid, I love this kid. And he had so much political capital with me that it was very easy for me to say yes. The problem was that the other coaches in the league were jealous of that decision, and then he didn't even get voted to all-league because of that, which is, I don't understand the selfishness of some other coaches at times. So that I'm very proud of, though, that he did that and he returned to full service in his, you know, in his senior year, actually, because it was his junior year that he was taking all these AP classes. So then moving forward, I had another player who had actually quit the team the year before. The team captain the next year campaigned with me rigorously to try to get him to come back to the team. And, you know, that was pretty tough because I'm not really happy about the whole situation of having left the team. But, you know, I do believe in second chances. And I know that if I ever screw up, I want a second chance. So if I'm gonna want that, then I have to be able to give that. So we worked something out. Now this young man was also working part time as a tennis coach at an inner city tennis program, and he was working with a dear friend of mine. And so we had an arrangement where he would only play the matches. And I let him know at the beginning, if you miss one, you're done. It's over. So, you know, I need communication. This was before cell phones. So, you know, and I think email had just been invented. But, you know, I need this communication that, you know, you have to be at every match without fail, and you have to be a good citizen and really, you know, mix with the guys and go out of your way to interact with people at the matches. And he took it on, and he turned from being kind of a prima donna himself into a leader. And that was a key ingredient in us winning a championship that year. So, you know, I'm proud of myself and my flexibility, but I'm mostly proud of him that he honored his commitment and showed up to everything and alerted me quickly if he was ill or something, had some legitimate reason. So I think I'm very happy with both of those. And then I had an interesting thing where we had a nationally ranked girl who was coming to the school. She was a freshman, and I'd heard about that she was coming, and so as school was approaching, I was trying to get in touch with her, find out who she is and how can we get her out there to first day of practice. And the first week of practice goes by and we haven't seen her. Second week of practice goes by, we haven't seen her. Nobody can seem to reach her or her family. The athletic director can't get through to her or her parents. School starts and we start to hunt her down. I get a message through someone that, oh yeah, she plans to come this week. A full month went by, and she shows up the day before, though, the day of our first match. This is surreal. This is just craziness, right? So she shows up 15 minutes before our first league match. I hand her her uniform. She goes, puts it on. She beats last year's league champion 6-0, 6-1. She comes off the court, and she says, 14-year-old girl says to me, 42-year-old man, hands on hips, defiant look on face, I'm only playing the home matches this year.
Nice.
To which I responded, go change out of your uniform. You're done. It's over.
Good for you.
So we go through this lengthy, lengthy, drawn-out season of drama with this young lady. And it was just awful. Just truly awful. So she would not show up to matches with lame excuses. And she also happens to play for an academy that I have I have nothing good to say about. So I'm not going to. And I just think that really robs that kid of that opportunity. Now, if she had come and said, oh, hello, sir, yes, you know, I would love to play for the team, and, you know, is there some way that I can have some sort of flexibility, you know, because I want to respect you and the team, and yet, you know, I have this schedule, can we work something out? I probably would have said, yeah, just show up and play all the matches, and then maybe you can skip this one and this one, because you're not going to get anything out of that. I mean, I'm not altogether inflexible. I've already proven that in the past. So what it turns out is that the principal, the family had gone to the principal already and gotten an agreement from the principal directly that she could play only the home matches.
But you weren't in the loop with that?
No, I wasn't in the loop on that. So I thanked the principal for putting me in such a horrible place. And this is just awful. Okay, so with her in the lineup, the team broke its 70-match losing streak. 70. And
wow.
And then the next day she was sick. So she calls me to say, oh, I can't play today, I'm sick. Well, she didn't know that the TV reporters were going to be at the match. So we had a feature on High School Sports Focus, which is a Bay Area TV show dedicated to high school sports, and we were going to be the team in the spotlight. We were going to be the featured team of the week for all sports in the Bay Area because of breaking the 70-match losing streak. So my team captains were featured, and they were awesome, but our little prima donna girl missed the interview because she was too busy. She had to go take her private lesson. How often do tennis players really get to be interviewed on TV? That's kind of a precious moment missed.
Sure. So let me ask you, as a parent, how, in an ideal world, would the parents have come to you? Would you have preferred the child come to you? How would, if you could write that, how would you write it?
Well, I did write it. Thank you. So my second book is called Playing Sports Right Your Way. And it's about empowering kids. So you know, this is where I think I would want to talk about my own parenting, because here's what I would do with my kid. If my kid was having something like this, I would say to them, go talk to your coach. As a parent of sports, I was the parent that did not meddle at all in my kids' athletic lives. Not at all. Because I know how it feels. Now, I might have a conversation with the coach about, oh, hey, my kid's having an injury right now, or, you know, how's everything going? You know, is my kid, you know, behaving properly? Are they working hard, you know? And then just some, you know, but in baseball, I was always standing way out in the left field. You know, I was way along the third base line, as far away from the dugout as I could be. You know, and if I was coaching my son's soccer team, I would yell at every other kid but him. And, yeah, so I would say that it really should be the kid. I mean, what's sports all about? Is it about your parents taking charge of things for you? Where's the personal growth in that? One thing I've really truly loved. I think this is when I most satisfying thing about coaching is when my players develop such a close-knit relationship with me that they can tell me exactly what needs to be said, whether I like it or not, because they know their voice can be heard and that I will respect them. And I treat my players as near equals. So I want those players to come to me as respectful young adults who have a voice of their own, and so that we can discuss and collaborate. And why would a parent want to mitigate that or jump in front of that or force that? I don't understand.
Well, it's interesting that you bring this up, because in the last day and a half, I have had two separate ongoing discussions about this very topic.
Okay.
One aspect of it is what should the parent do and what should the kid do? The other aspect of it is, are sports solely about winning and losing, or is there a life lesson component that needs to be acknowledged, respected, and addressed?
Let's take them in reverse order. Okay, well, let's take me as an example. So I'm never going to stop learning. So I'm in this lifelong learning adventure through tennis. And I'm not going to stop until I'm dead. So here's something I learned this year that really helped me a lot, and I think speaks to this. All right, so you have, in management theory, you have theory X, theory Y, which people are very well aware of, but not a lot of people are aware of theory Z, right? Theory X is the one where workers are lazy and they need to be coerced into doing everything. The motivation has to come from the outside. They need extrinsic motivation. Theory Y holds that workers want to work, they just need to be placed in an area that kind of jives with who they are, and then they become intrinsically motivated. And so, but theory Z is incredible, and I realized that I started as a blend of X and Y, and I became Y, and then I became Z, but I didn't know it. And theory Z is that everything we do is a lifelong exercise in becoming better people. So in the book Playing Sports Right Your Way, which is on Amazon, I talk about that, and it starts with, hey, life is a game. It's a very serious game, but it is a game. And our sports are a much less serious game, but it is a microcosm of what we can learn to develop ourselves in life, because you learn to overcome adversity. You learn to become a teammate. You learn to accept coaching and interact with an adult other than your parent. You learn to trust one another. I mean, there's so many incredible things that happen in sports that cannot be learned in a book. Which brings up another one. This is hilarious because I've coached a lot of players who are very academically bright in terms of their book learning. And I like to tease them like this. Hey, can you put that net strap on that net? Here, let me show you how to do that. And then I come back and it's done horribly. Right? And then I ask the kid, what's your GPA anyway? Oh, 4.0. I'm like, no, you don't have a 4.0. You can't even put a net strap on. Not recommending you for Stanford. Learn how to put a net strap on. Then you're actually valuable to me. And they know I'm being sarcastic and I'm teasing them, but when I get these kids who are so academically bright, and over the course of 4 years, they become young men and young women who can talk to me, and we can have a conversation, and there's that trust built that they will go to war for me and for their teammates. Then I will write them delightful recommendations because I have full confidence that they're going to not only succeed, but thrive and be leaders in the world.
Right.
And so here's that quote that I think I tweeted this to you. You know, one parent says to the other, "Oh, I heard your kid got a full ride to Backwater State. Well, my kid's just a brain surgeon."
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, how many of these kids are really going to go on that far? And then what does it mean anyway? Okay, if your kid gets a full ride and then they go and they play the pro circuit and they get up to 300 in the world, then it just means that they had a life of staying in sharing bad hotel rooms with others and playing on crappy courts in some out-of-the-way place. Love, that's wonderful. I mean, unless you really make the top, there's not really a lot there. So what does it all mean, you know?
Right. Well,
we assign too much meaning to the ultimate ranking that you achieve, and we don't assign enough meaning to the lessons learned along the way.
Exactly. And that was the discussion that I was having. And it was just interesting to participate in that and hear from various junior coaches that felt that their job was strictly to teach players how to win, versus other coaches who chimed in saying that they viewed their job as so much more than that, their job was helping to shape the development of the whole person, not just the tennis player. And
that's awesome. You know, the funny thing is, I'm still more about the winning than I am the character development. So don't get me wrong there. I have to be honest about that. I want to win. But, you know, but the character development is is solved along the way, because it's sometimes it's the character issues that mean that the winning's not happening.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, just again, drawing on personal experience with my kid, the things that he has learned as a result of being a tennis player have in turn made him a better tennis player.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking about things like handling somebody who's making bad calls or goading you on the court, handling a challenging situation where, you know, you might not agree with an official, or handling a challenging situation like a high school coach, you know, who is not willing to be flexible, and figuring out how to manage that. All of these skills that he has learned as a result of his involvement in the game of tennis have helped him develop a self-awareness and a self-assuredness and a confidence that carries over into his matches.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. And, you know, there's nothing better than it's 100 degrees, it's you're serving at 6-7 in the third set tiebreaker, and you get salty, sweaty sunscreen go right in your eye on second serve.
Right.
That's the pinnacle, because when you nail that second serve and win that point, then you know you've got everything you need.
Right. So that's
such a great feeling, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
But it brings
us back. That's awesome. Let me tell you. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it brings us back to the question of when do we as parents step in and handle things versus trusting our child or empowering our child to take care of those things?
Well, I would say not too early. And you know, failure is a part of success. So if you're stepping in to avert failure for your kid, then I think you're doing them a disservice, because I think, you know, that by and large, I mean, failing in the smaller things, right? But they have to encounter adversity. If they never really truly encounter adversity and have to take responsibility and make an adjustment, then it's crippling. You know, it reminds me of the movie Remember the Titans, which I think is such a great film when it comes to this particular issue, because that coach was trying to get the players to take full responsibility for their behavior, and the other coach was letting them off the hook. And the great quote from that movie is, "You're crippling those kids." And it you know, let me tell you some stories about my own kids, because I think that they're instructive. And you know, my daughter was pretty much forced to go to everything tennis, because we didn't really have any other child care set up for her. So little Miss dragged along, right? And so here, 4 years old, she started playing, and she was having a little fun with it because she liked her little instructor who was so cute. And then age 7, my daughter looks up to me and says, "I hate tennis." And then, you know, and she's looking at me to see if she's hurt my feelings, because I think she's trying to. So I look down on my little 7-year-old little sprite, and I say, "Are you trying to hurt my feelings? Because it's not working." So I'm like, "Okay, that's fine. But you have to come to tennis camp, because we don't have any other daycare for you, so make friends, do your best, and have fun with it. And then the time came, you know, within a couple of years that she didn't have to come to camp anymore because she had other activities she could go do. And she became a good swimmer. So her swimming pretty much took off the next year. And now she's been a 4-year varsity swimmer at her high school. And I mean, I don't think she's going to be a high school swimmer, and she's wanted to quit sports at different times. She's wanted to quit swimming. And my wife and I have said, okay, well, find a different sport and then you can quit swimming. You know, and then the possibility of modeling or acting came up, and we said, okay, well, if you go fully into modeling or acting, then yeah, you can quit swimming. But that didn't happen, so we kind of made her stick to her commitment. And that's largely because of the horrible statistics of what happens to girls if they quit sports right around the age of 13, which is what they normally do.
Right.
With my son pretty much played everything. He played baseball for about 5 years, soccer for 5 years, basketball. He did martial arts for 1 year and hated it, but we finished the year. And so he did all these different things. And then he was 11. He said, hey, Dad, you know what? I don't want to play baseball. I don't want to play basketball. I don't want to play soccer. I only want to play tennis, and it's not because of you. No, and I was like, whoa, okay, whatever, man, okay, you know. But you know what? Do you know how great that felt to be told? How many parents listening would love their kid to say, look, I want to play tennis and you can't stop me? And I will posit this, that the reason that you're not hearing that is because the kid hasn't really truly made the choice. You know, I know all the horrible things that happen to people who specialize in tennis from a young age, all the overuse injuries they get. So I was determined to make sure that my kid was running around on grass for a long, long time. So here's the payoff. Just last night, my son was writing an essay for college applications, which my wife read to me. And it would make you want to cry because he talked about how he had learned to become so self-reliant because of tennis.
That's awesome.
And it's because, you know, other than the coaching I did, you know, I didn't do anything else for him for his tennis. He did it all. So, and there came a time he got burnt down on USTA tennis, so he only played high school tennis from about the age of 15 on. And he became number one player on the team briefly, and then also was a captain on the team. And the coaches loved him, and every year at the banquet they would say, this is the boy that loves tennis.
But interesting that the love sustained itself because of playing high school tennis.
Yeah, I mean, he was so burned out. He was getting, he got really tired of all the cheating and kind of the bullying. And I think he also didn't like what junior tennis did to me. I mean, because I really hated sitting by and not being able to do anything while the opponent makes 8 bad calls, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's just enormously frustrating, and that's a whole other topic. But I really believe that if every good parent who's listening to this who can't stand that chooses one good battle to fight this year, that whole system will crumble. That whole well-developed system of cheating, if you take your worst experience of the year and you fight that one tooth and nail and just go completely berserk, then the system can change. I think, though, it's really important to be well targeted, and even though you're incredibly angry, to be very rational. So when you're writing your lovely letter to whoever, you know, stick to one, two, or three main points and don't deride everything in sight, because then you just come across as a lunatic. Mm-hmm. But one very good targeted letter, you know, my player played this match, I saw this many bad calls, people around me agreed, officials were present and did nothing, I find this deplorable, thank you. End of letter. What can be done? Do you care?
That's a whole other issue for sure, and you know, one we'll have to tackle another day because we have reached the end of our hour. But I do want to say thank you so much for coming on and sharing your perspective on high school tennis and its value for all levels of young tennis players, from the most beginner to the most advanced, and you know, to recognize the fact that there is a place in high school tennis for any child that wants that experience. And it may take some creativity on the part of the player, it may take some creativity on the part of the coach, but there's no reason not to at least attempt to make the situation work so that every kid gets to experience that team aspect. And while we all know that college coaches aren't necessarily paying attention to whether or not a child played for his or her high school, we do know that learning how to be part of a team is a crucial skill as a kid enters the college tennis world, whether it's at a varsity level or at a club level in college. You know, you have to know and understand the team dynamic. And so what better preparation than high school tennis? So, Bill, thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, and I my final thought on that is, don't underestimate your presence, because let's say you're a senior and you're in this incredible player and there's a freshman on the team who just admires you like you can't believe, and you don't even know it, but you inspire them and they want to be like you. But if you're not there, then they don't know, and they wonder, what am I doing here if he's not there? So you can influence that kid, definitely. I mean, you leave a legacy of the people you contact during that time.
Exactly. Well, thank you again, and I urge all of my listeners to go on Amazon.com and do a search for Bill Patton. You'll come up with his books, and they are valuable reads, valuable additions to your home library. And, Bill, thanks for all of your insights. Thanks for always taking my phone calls.
Sure. Let me make an offer also. May I make an offer to your people?
Please.
Okay. So right now on my website, which is 720degreecoaching.org, 720degreecoaching.org, there are some specials on my books that you can get directly from me. So special pricing and package offers and whatnot. And then I'll even go one further. If anyone wants to contact me and they would like a 30-minute free coaching of, like, you know, how to deal with their tough situation that they're dealing with, whether it's junior tennis or high school tennis or whatnot, then I will give anybody who's listening a free 30-minute consult.
That's very generous. Thank you so much for that offer. And having been the recipient of a couple of those sessions, I can say to my listeners, take him up on the offer.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Everybody have a great week. I hope you all survived your Thanksgiving holiday intact and are getting ready for this next onslaught of holiday craziness with the end of the semester and all that brings. Bill, thanks again. And to the rest of you, I will see you next week on Parenting Aces. Thanks for tuning in.